The Fred Minnick Show is brought to you by Michter's American Whiskeys and by 291 Colorado Whiskey.
Woo! Welcome back to the Fred Minnick Show, everybody. Hey, Fred here. I hope you're having a great week. I am. I know that. I'm having a great week. I'm just enjoying life, having good whiskey with good friends, and sending out stickers to folks. That's right. I've been sending out so many stickers, I had to reorder, get new stamps, but it's important to me that if you like this show, if you love listening to the Fred Minnick Show, I want to make sure that you have a sticker to put on your computer, on your car, your trash can, wherever you want to put it. Please, 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 just do not use it in criminal activity. Because here's the thing, if you use it in a criminal activity and they can't identify you and the only thing that they can see on your person or whatever it is that you're using, and it's the Fred Minnick Show sticker, the FBI, the cops, whoever, if you robbed a bank, they're going to call me. And then somehow I'm going to be held accountable. And then the people who are caught up in the whole mess are going to be like, well, you know, this person's, you know, using a Fred Minnick Show sticker. So that must mean we can sue him. Right? 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 I kid. But if you'd like a sticker, hit me up on fredminnick.com. That's fredminnick.com. And yeah. Get your sticker. We'll send you one. Now, when you do write us, make sure you put in your address. That's important. So this week's guest is someone I've been a huge fan of basically my entire adult life. So 15 on, which, you know, 15 is not an adult. But, you know, Our Lady Peace is one of those bands that just, you know these songs and you hear them time after time and in playlists and things that are remembering the 1990s when I grew up. And so getting to talk to the lead singer of Our Lady Peace, Rain Maida, was kind of special for me. It was a good opportunity to kind of relive a little bit of my youth, but we also got to explore something that I did not see coming. See, Rain is a really philanthropic, big-hearted person, and he spent some time in Iraq. And so we talked a little bit about what it was like to be in Iraq, both of us, from an angle that you will not see coming. I promise you. It's toward the end, so make sure you listen to the whole interview. But it was a fascinating, fascinating story that we shared. And anybody who's been to Iraq, you probably experienced this too, and it'll warm your heart to hear it. It's not a war-torn story. It's a heartfelt story. So make sure you listen to that. This week is also the week that we're trying to close out the Ronald McDonald Pappy Van Winkle raffle. So if you can, if you have $100 to spare and you want to get a chance to win 5 bottles of Pappy Van Winkle, head on over to pappyraffle.org. That's pappyraffle.org. And your money will go to a good cause, and the chances are that you have a better shot at winning this than you actually do finding a bottle at SRP in a liquor store. So think about that for a little bit. Think about that. At any rate, enjoy this week's episode with Rain Maida. But first, a word from our sponsors.
At Michter's Distillery, our passion is making the finest bourbon, rye, and American whiskey possible. When you only produce very small batch and single barrel whiskey as we do, each and every barrel has to be perfect. No detail is too small for our production team. From careful attention to the 18-month or more air-dried wood used in the construction of our barrels, to entering our distillate into the barrel at the costlier lower barrel entry proof of 103 so that it's smoother, to heat cycling our barrel houses, to our signature filtration protocol, we spare no expense in pursuing our goal of making the greatest American whiskey. And no Michter's gets bottled until our master distiller Dan McKee and our master of maturation Andrea Wilson say it's just right. Michter's Fort Nelson Distillery in downtown Louisville, Kentucky is open for tours and tastings. Book your visit on our website and stop by the bar at Fort Nelson for a world-class cocktail. For more information, follow us on social media at Michter's Whiskey, go to michters.com, or visit your favorite bartender. Michter's Distillery. It's all about the whiskey.
Mike Hines here, founder of Nashville Barrel Company. Hey, look, I invested my life savings into drinking bourbon, and damn it, I want to drink a bourbon with you. Come see me at Nashville Barrel Company, just minutes from downtown Nashville. Must be 21 Danner.
People want a great whiskey that isn't like every other whiskey. So nestled in the shadow of Pike's Peak, 291 Colorado Whiskey is distilled from grain to barrel to bottle. Exceptional Western whiskey, unlike any other. Passion permeates every sip. Utilizing grains from the Colorado Plains, water collected from Pike's Peak reservoirs, and finished with aspen staves, 291 Colorado Whiskey is an award-winning single barrel and small batch whiskey. Hard made the Colorado way. Our recipe, our stills, independent and always rugged, refined, and rebellious. 291 Colorado Whiskey is proud of its humble roots and excited as we expand to new frontiers. Get your taste of Colorado at 291coloradowhiskey.com. Online orders available or find a bottle near you. Ride it like you stole it. Drink it like you own it. Live fast. Drink responsibly.
Joining the Fred Minnick Show, Rain Maida of Our Lady Peace. How you doing, man?
I'm good, Fred. How are you?
It's good. It's good to see you in this. It's always better if it's in person, but these virtual tastings are as much fun. But I have to tell you, your latest single resonated so deeply with me because I've been saying this since the Kardashians became famous. But the Stop Making Stupid People Famous. Best name of a song ever. Best name of a song ever.
I'll take it. Yeah, I mean, it's funny, the Kardashians. I followed the breadcrumbs back a little bit further. Like, my like, aha moment was probably Paris Hilton. But then, you know, growing up, it's like Public Enemy's, like, seminal hip-hop band.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden, Flavor Flav is on that VH1 reality show. I was like, we have hit the bottom, man. But obviously we didn't. That was just the beginning.
You know, I always thought Paris, though, was strategic, and everything that she was doing was a play to make more money, because she used her fame and her money to get more famous and more money, and then she kind of disappeared. We're seeing her a little bit now, but she kind of went away for a bit.
You're right. You're spot on, man. She's smart. Like, she's first in this NFT space. Like, she's killing it. She's a smart lady.
All right. So I was gonna bring up NFTs eventually, but what's the deal with these things? Half the people I talk to, you know, you try to explain it to them, and it's like their eyes gloss over, and they have no idea what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's a tough one, right? But I think it's just early. I think, like, the art world got in and they get it. And, like, anyone that's in the metaverse already in collectibles, like, they're killing it, and they're collecting things, and you're seeing, like, things like Bored Apes just jumped. You know, I think of Bored Ape, which is basically just, you know, an original one of one ape that you can buy. It's a digital asset. I think one sold for $2 million a few days ago. But music will catch up. I think what it'll be used for eventually is, like, everything in terms of, like, I know I'm Italian. Got a lot of friends, like, in olive oil, right? Sounds pretty godfatherish, but it's true. Like, that stuff is all fake. I'm sure whiskey as well, and bourbon and scotch. Like, are we drinking the real stuff, or is there some shady stuff going on in that industry too? If you can add NFTs to that, to sneakers, like, anything to prove its authenticity and ownership and authorship when you talk to about music and art, that's the trick and the benefit of a blockchain, right?
Yeah, and, you know, when it comes to whiskey, there definitely is a lot of counterfeit out there, and it's real nasty. But it's bourbon. It's kind of new to bourbon. It's been happening in scotch for a long time, definitely in cognac for a long time. But
right.
But bourbon has never had this kind of, like, fame, you know. In the modern world, fame is so different, too. It's like an influencer can bring you millions of fans immediately. And what we're seeing now with bourbon is that there's so many people getting into the space that they're just spending stupid money on a bottle that, you know, 15 years ago I would pay $20 for. Now they're paying $500 for it, you know, so...
Well, if I buy that $500 bottle, I want to make sure that that's the real deal. And I think that's where NFTs and blockchain can definitely help. I mean, you see it in olive oil, the way that, you know, I'm from Toronto originally. Mm-hmm. The worst is actually maple syrup. Supposedly, like, you know, the stuff we're really buying is, it's not even close to like pure maple syrup these days.
Yeah, I believe that. So actually, you know, so the bottle, I sent you a bottle of Michter's 10-year-old. This would be a good, this would be a really good bottle to kind of go through of like, you know, this is a high-end bottle, and this is how they, you know, kind of come. They have like a wax, they have like a wax top here. They've got the, you know, some numbers here to talk about what barrel it was, and then a few other things. You know, it would not be, you know, how could you use an NFT to like help validate this? Like how could you do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's really, you know, you're just imprinted on the bottle and you put a hash on it somewhere. Mm-hmm. And as long as it was like that I just pulled that thing off, like the wax, that's so dope. You know, at bottling, if you put that hash on it, all of a sudden that's it, you know? And so wherever that gets sold, it has that authentication, it has that authorship that it's actually from Michter's. And I open it and I'm gonna probably drink a lot of this today. But if I was gonna sell it, you know, like 5 years from now, it's gonna have that hash along with it, and it's just validation, right?
Okay. You can't mess. So that could be something that, you know, bourbon producers, if you're listening to this, it's you know, Rain's throwing the gauntlet down here. Maybe add some NFTs to the bottles. That could be an interesting way to protect your products. Fascinating.
Yeah.
So,
sure.
So we poured here. This is 10-year-old. Michter's is a brand that's coming on really strong right now. And I just did I had a show in Oklahoma where I did a blind flight with a bunch of extremely rare stuff, and this bottle took second. Coming in first was Pappy Van Winkle 23-year-old, and this beat the Michter's 20. So it's a lot of people. This is on a short list for a lot of people for whiskey of the year right now. This 10-year-old.
All bourbon's not from Kentucky, right?
That's right. So bourbon can be made anywhere in the United States. In fact, okay. In our tasting lineup here, we have a Wyoming whiskey, a bourbon there that we'll be tasting. But in 1964, Congress declared bourbon to be a unique product of the United States. And actually, prior to that, Canada would make bourbon, and the United States government ended up having it. You know, we ended up having a mini trade war with Canada over them bottling bourbon and bottled and bond, because Canada is a blended whiskey country, incredible blended whiskey. Some of the best whiskey in the world comes from Canada, but they were trying to like mimic, you know, the U.S. styles. And during this time, there's a big back and forth between U.S. and Canada. They hated each other in the whiskey circles. And there was for a brief time in the 1930s, there was a trade war over bourbon. Yeah. And and they ended up you know, with Congress passing of that legislation in 1964, you know, Canada would cease to stop, you know, using the word bourbon in there. But when in fact Crown Royal a couple of years ago released a bourbon mash, and they ended up getting some cease and desist real quickly. But that was just to kind of tap into the popularity of bourbon. It's very complicated, but the fact is that Canada does distill the exact same stuff that is distilled here in terms of a recipe, but they can't put bourbon on the label, you know. But like the Canadian distillers are blenders, so they will distill what they call a bourbon mash bill. And they would distill like a rye whiskey mash bill and a couple other things, and they will combine those together to create their product. And so they distill first and then blend. They're incredible blenders.
So blending is legit? Like it's a skill?
It is the most underrated skill in whiskey. And
really?
And it varies. The appreciation for it varies by country. So in Scotland, there's a great appreciation for blending. In Canada, it's enormous. In the United States, for a long time, blending was considered a dirty word, to the point that the distillers would call the actual act of blending barrels, marrying barrels, marriage. They would use every word but blending, because blending was tied to those old whiskeys in the 30s and late 1800s that knocked bourbon off the shelf because they were cheaper. So that's a little historic backstory for you there on
I love it.
The word blending.
I love, yeah, I always felt like anything that's blended, it's like it's never as good because it's cheaper.
Yeah, and so. Now that's the uphill battle that Canadian distillers have, is that they branded themselves to be like that. And, you know, Whistlepig is a high value, highly sought after premium product, and they're purchasing their whiskey and largely from Alberta distillers, which is obviously in Alberta, Canada. And
yeah,
that's the best rye whiskey on the market for the most part. So, and what the Canadian distillers would do is they would take what they are bottling straight out of the barrel here in the United States. They would take that and blend it in with something else. So it's a style that has its place, but distillers in Canada are incredible.
Okay, I feel better about myself.
All right. So did you have a chance to taste the?
No, doing it right now. Right now.
So when you taste, don't drink it all. Just put a little bit on your palate, kind of feel it around a little bit. You know, see what part of the tongue it's hitting, and you'll taste the sweet notes on the tip, the savory in the middle, the bitterness like in the back and the middle, and then spiciness in the back.
I was gonna say I'm getting like some sweet notes on the front, some savory. Okay, that's exactly what you said. No, it's really it's beautiful. It's pretty smooth, but it has a little bite to it. I'm definitely not sophisticated in terms of how I describe it, but wow. Even the smell of it. I mean, my God, it's beautiful. Mm.
It is really nice. This is becoming like a staple in like high end bars right now. Is this this 10-year-old? This is actually being requested over like 15-year-old and older products. So bourbon has to go into a new charred oak barrel. So every day it's in that wood. It's like extracting all the color and the wood sugars, and then they will sell those used barrels to places like Canada and Scotland and Ireland that age their whiskey and use bourbon barrels. And so this is, they have found the sweet spot with this year's 10-year-old release, because it's just got the right amount of balance, and most certainly there's still some nice like hatch chili, some pepper.
It's got that little bit of pepper like at the end. So what's the deal with the color with bourbon? Is that an indicator at all?
Yeah. So the color. The color is basic. When bourbon goes into the barrel, it's as clear as the water from your tap, and then it's working in and out of that wood like every single day, and it is it can't have anything added to it. So this is all from the barrel, and so the darker it is, the older it is, and or higher the proof. So it is a great indication of time in the barrel. In fact, we can go to the next one. We can go to the Kentucky Senator.
Yeah, that's got some real darkness to it.
And so that's a 15-year-old. Do you have multiple glasses or just one?
Can you go give another glass? But it's got to be one of the whiskey glasses. I got my kid on call here to do my dirty work.
That's nice. My 7-year-old he'll carry my stuff. So it's good. He'll be like walking through the liquor, liquor store, bringing me something that, that I need. And it's funny, like at 7, he knows more about the bourbon industry than 99% of the adults in the world. So,
I love it. I love it.
But you can see, like, this has 5 years. This has 5 years on the Michter's, and it's got a little bit more proof on it. But if you take a look, you know, you can definitely see a big color difference.
Sal, yeah. Let's go, bro.
I was trying to find it.
Thank you. Doesn't smell as strong as a Michter's to me. Like, it doesn't have, is that correct, or am I missing something?
Well, you've got a different glass, so it's going to be the glass.
Bigger glass?
You get, so your escape, so we were previously sipping out of the Glencairn.
Yep.
And so this is a very concentrated nose. Like, it's like formulated to hit your nose exactly. Whereas that one, you've got a lot of headspace and there's a lot of stuff moving out. But that won't change much on the taste. I mean, it's still going to taste like it's going to taste.
If you smell that one now and see if that's as strong as it was before.
Wow, that's really nice. The difference, what would be the difference? This one might be actually smoother, no?
It's about, so it's 17, I think it's 17 proof points higher, actually.
Wow. And it's, so, yeah.
So smooth is kind of a weird objective, you know, subjective term, which what is smooth for me, someone who's like been drinking whiskey, like out of the womb, is going to be different than what's smooth for someone who's just getting into it. But right. often it's like, it's a matter of mouthfeel, you know, it's not even the burn of the alcohol or anything. It's just like how it feels in the mouth. It's like this one does have a very mouth coating, buttery kind of dripping down the jaw.
Okay.
Feel.
Buttery. Like for me, if like as a layman here, I didn't get as many sensations from this Kentucky as I did from the Michter's. The Michter's had like so much else going on. Mm-hmm. Like there's so many things happening at the same time. This is definitely like, I like the way you said buttery, like it's just, it coated, it's really nice, but it not as, maybe not as peppery for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, they're both quite something. Now, when you're writing music, do you ever sip on a little something, something to get you some influence?
Yeah, I do. I kind of been like over the last 10 years, like a Scotch guy. So, you know, obviously, you know, similar here, but that's my thing. Like I love the idea because I think music creativity takes time. Mm-hmm. So the idea that you could like with Scotch and bourbon and whiskey, I like the idea that you just sip them. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not sitting there pounding drafts. I'm not really a beer guy, to be honest. So, I love, it for me, it works like hand in hand with music and especially after, you know, a show. And my trick live is, and it's, I know this is probably like, you know, doesn't work for you, but I always have a little, even like, you know, it's cheap, but like Jameson with a little like actual Coca-Cola. I'm not a soda mm-hmm. guy, but like the sugar in the Coke and a Jameson or whatever. It's great for my throat.
So will you sip a little bit before you start singing?
I just sip it through the show. Yeah, I literally just have like, you know, a couple shots of Jameson and not a lot of Coke, but just enough for the sugar in there, and that's what I sip during the show. And it's amazing. Like it you know, look, I'm sure like a vocal you know, professional will tell you any alcohol, it dries your vocal cords out, blah blah blah. But I just it. Honestly, it gets better through the show as I sip it.
You know, it's interesting. Like everybody's different on that. When I've asked them, some of the people who can hit the highest notes, you know, they're like, yeah, I drink all throughout. But those who have like really like deep voices, like, oh yeah, I can't touch anything. So it's very,
yeah.
It's fascinating. It's almost like, it's almost like there hasn't been enough studying around, you know, vocal cords and what actually impacts them. So I think that's it's almost like I study taste, like the history of taste and how people are influenced by their genetics and everything. I think it could be very similar to, you know, vocal cords and what could you know, impact them. Because I have friends. I mean, they're always going hoarse and they don't drink. And it's like it makes no sense that you're always going hoarse. Someone raises their voice just a little bit and they're like hoarse for a week. So it's,
yeah, I'll tell you the biggest bullshit out there is that throat coat tea that like I see on everyone's rider, and I bought in for a minute, and tea's terrible for you. Coffee's terrible for you. It definitely dries your throat out. And that's why it was actually my wife. So my wife, who's like a really good singer and a professional, she started on like the actual Coca-Cola years ago. And so I just adapted that because I was like, I'm not a big Coke guy. I get it for the sugar. So let's spice it up a bit. So started throwing, you know, scotch and whiskey in there. And I don't know. That's the throat coat right there. To say that.
That's your jam.
It's amazing. I played first show back a few days ago, and that was my go-to right away. And I had a great show.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. It does feel good to be back out again. You know, I don't know how long it'll last or if it will be sustained, but it does feel good to go back to shows and, you know, see talent perform, if you will.
Yeah, and I think even like, you know, when you're talking about drinking as well, like it's such a social thing. Like I found myself, my wife and I definitely drank during COVID, probably every day, but like opening up like a bottle of Michter's or whatever, like that, you don't want to do that by yourself.
Right.
Stuck in your basement, you know, that's dark.
Well, you know, the past year, so basically what I do is, you know, my performance is sipping whiskey with people. And in this past year, like I was always, I had a lot of private tastings virtually, you know, that I do with, you know, through retailers and stuff. And it was amazing. And I kept seeing all these people drinking more, and people were having like Zoom happy hour calls. And it got a lot of people through the first year of the pandemic. And it was not like people drinking to get through it. It was the social element, like kind of like you mentioned, like we crave that. And, you know, this stuff is really, I mean, it's just a conduit to friends and to good times. Yep. So, you know, so cheers to you, man. Cheers to you and Our Lady Peace, man. You all are so iconic, so important to the rock, you know, rock movement and, you know, the 90s. That was the music that inspired me in so many ways. And it was my time of high school and college. And, you know, Our Lady Peace is one of the few bands from that time that are still going. And I know you're the only original member left, but I mean, what's it like to, you know, to look at the old Billboard charts and look around and see it's pretty much you all and just a couple others left?
Yeah, Fred, I appreciate that, man. Thank you for saying that. I've always looked at music kind of like a fine wine or a bottle of scotch or whiskey, mm-hmm. in the sense of like there's very few that age really well, you know. And so all my thing from the beginning was like, I think about like, let me make a bunch of, like, don't ever judge us by a song or one album. It's about a body of work, right? And so, you know, when we're looking at like something like a Michter's or that Kentucky Senator, like 15 years, anything that's like 20 or 30 years old, like that's how I see myself. A lot of parallels there. And I, this new album, you know, I don't even think it's a bold thing. I think it's the best album we've ever made for a bunch of different reasons. Like the ability to reinvent yourself, the ability to sustain a career, like all those things are, it's hard, man. It's a hard, you know, music's tough. And so, I'm very happy to be sitting here talking about bourbon and talking about music.
Yeah. And music has changed so much. Like, you know, I hear from musicians all the time, like when they're talking, you know, when the mic's off or the camera's off, of like, you know, they'll give their opinion about someone. And like, I'm a layman. I don't know anything about music. I love listening to music, but I can't tell you a drummer sucks. I can't tell you a guitarist is off or anything like that. I can't tell you any of that stuff. Right. But it's amazing to me what, like, you know, and I would consider you, you know, like you could play in any generation. You know, you're that kind of musical talent. But it's always amazing to me that, you know, we are, music tends to be generational. Like the music today, no way it's a hit in the 90s or the 70s.
Right, right.
You know, and like Our Lady Peace, your music is rather timeless. And not to say it's the exact same, but I think of Hall & Oates in much the same way. Like, their music is like hit after hit after hit after hit, and it's very different, but it's timeless as well. Fleetwood Mac's the same way, you know. There's not a lot of timeless music, in my opinion, being made right now. But you know, so the status of music, from an artist perspective, I can imagine to be in your shoes after, you know, all these years, to still be, you know, right there in the thick of it, you know, gotta feel good.
Yeah, definitely. Like, definitely planted a flag in the ground. I think the thing about music that maybe parallels alcohol too is, like, there's just so much of it these days. It's hard to know what's good. It's hard to know what to listen to. It's hard to find music. It's hard to discover, because you think it would be easy because we can just get on Spotify or Apple and listen to anything. But, you know, it's overwhelming. And I look at, like, the craft brewery industry. My God, there's so many out there now. Is that happening to bourbon and whiskey as well?
It is, but there's quite a bit more capital investment and time for a distillery.
Can't jump in, some guy in there on the weekend can't just jump in.
Yeah, the with craft beer, well, it's definitely not easy. You know, there's the step of fermentation. There's obviously more to it than that, but they don't have to distill and, like, you know, a batch after batch after batch, you know, they can improve 20-fold in a matter of a year, whereas the distillers may not know where their improvements need to be for a year or two, you know. So
right, that's a good point. Yeah,
unless they're making, you know, an unaged product like unaged rum or gin or vodka, you know, things like that, then you know, the distillers, you know, have to wait, you know. But craft beer is a very, very different beast. And and by the way, there's a lot of bad craft beer out there.
Yeah, but craft beer is like pop music to me, and I think that makes sense now. You know, they're not really in it for the long game. You just try to put something out there and see if it works, and a lot of it's bad. Yeah,
and it's like, just because you can add hops to something doesn't mean you should. But so now I want to take you to, we're going to jump up in proof. I just want to warn you, this is going to be 118 proof. It's the Elijah Craig barrel proof. Now, I have a philosophy, Rain, that you taste differently from day to day. And I imagine it's very similar to singing. You probably have your good days and your bad days. You can always do it, but you definitely have some days, you know, man, I nailed it, and some days, ooh, I wasn't all there.
Yep.
It's the same with tasting. So I have already reviewed this one. I reviewed it pretty negatively for what it is. So this is a limited edition release series that I think is the best that you can get pretty easily, and this is still very good, but in comparison to its past releases, I thought it missed the mark. So I sent this to you to kind of have this conversation about tasting is as much of a physical activity as running or singing, and all of the things that you do leading up to the day that you taste or the moment you taste will influence how you taste in a moment. So This is going to be my first time tasting it since my review a couple of months ago. So we'll see if it still holds up to if it still fills on my palate and everything like I said before.
That's real. So I have a question then. Is mm-hmm. the bite and the peppery, is that all enhanced because of the proof?
In this case, there's a yes. You definitely feel that spice more because of the alcohol proof, but this is this one's got like
the, not digging it.
So I stand firm in my belief before that it's got like a woodiness, a bitterness in there that I don't like.
A bitterness, yeah, I feel that.
But that is to say too that you know, I'm also holding it to a standard that I have for this particular release.
So with these guys, when you're saying, I found what you're saying was interesting before, like you don't know, like how, like you. They distill this and put it in the barrels and hold on to them forever, and it comes out. If it's like that, like you say, they had the same kind of take as you. Like, what do? They got to release it, right?
Yeah, they. I mean, the fact is, you could put a pile of fermenting dishwater in a bottle and call it bourbon, and it would sell right now. So you. They're not having any problems not selling something just because I say I don't like it. In fact, when I say I don't like something, people typically buy it just to say I was wrong. But with this one, there was like all these like social media threads like agreeing and disagreeing with me, and it's like people get really passionate about this stuff. So it was kind of funny. But this is one that to me was completely off flavor profile for this particular product, and you know, while good, I think it may have been better off in a different bottle, a different brand of theirs. So,
gotcha. Hey man, we all miss the mark once in a while, right?
That's
right. I have songs that I'll never play, like I will never play.
Oh, not like that you've released?
Yeah, that we put on records, and it's like you know. It's one of those things. Sometimes you force stuff, and I would imagine maybe, like with these guys, behind closed doors, maybe even agree with you and be like, "Yeah, we missed the mark on this. It's not our best stuff, but we got to put it out."
Oh yeah, that would definitely happen. Or they'd be like, "You don't know what you're talking about. You're wrong," you know, or something like that. But it's not everything can be a 90-point score. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
So I do appreciate, especially the album analogy with the songs, because you gotta have a couple hits in there, and then you gotta have a bunch of filler, right?
Well, yeah, there's just always gonna be some misses. And look, when I go back to like thinking about this new album that's coming out, Spiritual Machines 2, there is no filler, there's no misses. Like I listened to this record for the first time. My kid's a basketball player, and we were in Alabama, so I flew into Atlanta. And I rented a car and I drove to Birmingham. It's like a couple hours. And I put on the record for the first time to like listen to it all the way through. And I was like smiling the whole way. First time, there's not a note. There's not something about the record that I would go back and change, which is pretty cool.
That's awesome. Do you have any songs that, you know, you're like, oh, I got to play this again. Ugh.
Yeah, it's funny. Like and a lot of bands that we had a hit called Somewhere Out There, mm-hmm. might actually be our biggest hit. And it's not that I don't like it, but it's the stuff that was around it, the way it was released, the label, just the way it was perceived. It was like, yeah, it's not my favorite. It's bad probably if we don't play it. And I would never do that to fans. I think that's pretty selfish. You know, like they pay money to see us play. And that was one of the songs that they come to hear. So we usually play it most nights. We didn't play a show in Toronto on Saturday, and I pulled it right at the end of the set. But you know, it happens. It's part of the journey.
Well, you know, you have a lot of songs that you all have done, so I'm sure your fans were, they got a healthy feeding of Our Lady Peace, and they didn't leave unsatisfied. So
I didn't see one hate text or email or post or something, so I'm good.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
All right, so now let's go to the Wyoming whiskey. Now, this is a bourbon that was made in the state of Wyoming, and the money go from this bottle, which this is a $250 bottle, I believe. I think that's right, is the SRP on it. Is going to the National Parks Foundation.
Well, just like in general, like all the parks across America.
Yeah, so there's like a foundation that helps maintain it, because our federal government doesn't always do the best job of making sure it's taken care of. I mean, there's all kinds of stories of like rangers working for free, you know, getting cut, like getting furloughed, and they're still working, you know, to maintain the parks. But, you know, the national parks, I think, is one of our country's greatest assets. And sometimes they get brought up in political discussions to have budgets cut. And this foundation kind of helps keep it going.
I love it.
Now, one of the things that you learn in wine is about terroir. And, you know, for a long time, American whiskey has known two states. And that's Tennessee and Kentucky.
Right.
And if sometimes Indiana, sometimes, you know, Indiana's got a couple distilleries that was really well known for a long time, and now they're getting back into the limelight. But what we're seeing now is that there's a lot of new distilleries coming online, not at the same pace as like craft beer, you know, which we talked about, but we're seeing a distillery in Wyoming, a few in Texas, New York, Oregon, state of Washington, all these places are having a big influence. And we're starting to see a little sign of terroir. And terroir in like France is like the weather, the geographical placement, whether it's by mountains or by a river, all of it having special microclimate impact on the grapes, and that goes into it. We're starting to see that with whiskey and American whiskey, which we've never had really before, you know, with water, elevation, types of woods that they're able to procure for their barrels. And this is a really great example of a bourbon that you would never taste coming from Kentucky.
I actually really like this.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it has a really nice finish. The thing about water, for real, like that is so real. There's I mean, this is an offside thing, but there's a pizza place here in LA called Demore's, and they bring the water in from Boston. Mm-hmm. Tastes like nothing in this city. It's my favorite pizza by far, and that's why, for sure.
Hmm. That sounds awesome. So how do they ship it in by like a tanker?
Or yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was living in Malibu when we first moved to LA from Toronto, and for whatever reason, this was one of the first pizza places we tried. And I was like, damn, this feels like East Coast pizza. And for 10 years, I never asked or said a word to them. And then finally we were sitting and the owner was in one of the, there's a bunch of them now, but mm-hmm. the OG one in Malibu. And I was like, man, like you're obviously from the East Coast. Like they had all the pictures on the walls from them being in Boston. And, but I said, how does this pizza taste like that? He's like, oh, it's the water. We ship it in. That's the main reason. So I for sure would think that would work with bourbon too.
Yeah, although like, you know, there are some states they put restrictions on water, like Nevada. There's a brand there called Smoke Wagon, and he's essentially not allowed to distill because of the amount of water it would take. And you know, they're at a water deficit at all times. Yeah. And you know, Texas is probably not far behind that. Whereas Kentucky, I mean, we have an aquifer that's enormous. You know, you just tap right into that, man. Boom. You know, got good water right there. Limestone filtered and everything. So it's, you know, you see what's happening in California with the wildfires all the time. It's just, I think at some point in the next decade, we're probably going to have to and the distilling community, there's going to have to be some very difficult questions answered about the use of water because of so many water shortages across the country. But
Can you tell me, like, I don't know the process as well, obviously. Why does it take so much water to distill?
So, you know, you have to, you ferment. You ferment the grains. Then you distill it, and for like a large amount of, I can't give you the exact amount, you know, the exact amount, but for something like this, if it, say this is filled up to the brim, you know, that would probably equate to a drop of spirit. So it takes a lot of water to distill, and when the grains enter the water, they cook them, so they convert the starches to sugars, and then they add yeast, and the yeast feeds on the sugars, and at this point, the yeast basically, you know, eats sugar and pisses out alcohol. So at this point, it's alcohol. It's no longer water or anything like that. Then they will take that fermentation, and they will distill it at certain degrees, you know, and it'll separate the alcohol from the solids, and it will basically, you know, drip out as a spirit. They will get a large amount of it, of that spirit, and then put it in a barrel, and at that point it's evaporating, so there's a lot of water lost, you know, through the entire process, through evaporation, through cooking, through distillation. So that's just part of it.
Right. It's like almonds.
Yeah.
Like right. Not supposed to eat almonds because it just takes too much water.
Yeah. And yeah, almonds are like, you know, there's been a few documentaries about that, like how aggressive they are about getting water rights from other areas. Whew.
Yeah.
Scary, man.
New world.
So you've always been like a socially conscious and active, you know, person. Is there anything, you know, you're really, you know, passionate about right now that you're, you know, that you're out there voicing your opinion for?
Politics, and, you know, I don't want to get too heavy in it, but I saw Peter Gabriel when I was first coming up. Talked about like Greenpeace and amnesty, and kind of just got me into like, okay, artists can be, they can wear two hats, right? They can, mm-hmm. they can be artists, which I appreciate, and I am. But then, you know, depending on what you sing about, you can bring in other people and have some influence there. And so we joined this organization early on called War Child, my wife and I, based out of Canada. And there was a chapter in the UK, in the Netherlands, in Canada, and started traveling early on. And I really accredit like War Child and the founders, who are like legit, like the godparents of our kids now. And they're doctors and just incredible people. They're not, you know, I don't use the word virtuous often, but they are truly virtuous. And then we just got to travel. So, you know, we're in Iraq, we're in Afghanistan, you know, we've been to Sudan, and their whole thing is about just protecting war affected children. So to see what's going on in Afghanistan right now is pretty heavy. Just knowing that War Child has two programs there that'll probably be shut down, if not already shut down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, it's like the world never stops, man. We just went globally through like whatever year and a half of hell with COVID, trying to come out of that, and, you know, seeing these fires start, you know, literally and figuratively in these other countries now. It's just rough.
Yeah. And, you know, I was a soldier in Iraq, and I worked with a lot of kids there. And one of the things that we did is we set up a clinic, for kids and, you know, just, you know, people who have never been outside of the United States and to some of these countries. It's difficult to understand until you see it for yourself. Yeah. Pictures do not do a child's inability to breathe because his mouth is swelling from some type of bite, you know, that won't be cured with normal medicine. It's just you can't fathom it. So I applaud you, man. And yeah, this what's happening with Afghanistan, it's hitting us all in the hearts. So I applaud you for your support with War Child.
Really, yeah, do. Thanks. Well, I mean, yeah, thank you for your service. It's funny when we know so many, you know, vets and soldiers, and like you said, they just have to travel. Like, I think traveling is so key, just to, you know, literally expanding your mind. Like, it sounds cliche, but that's the only way to do it, because seeing shit on your phone is one thing, but like you said, getting there, looking a kid in the eye or someone in the eye or someone. When we first landed in Iraq, I was like, we were scared. We were the first people back after between the two wars, and it was like, but people invited us in for tea. I was like, what's happening? You know, like, yeah, we're all humans, you know, under the surface, and there's bad people everywhere, but there's a lot of good people too, right?
All right, so you got it. So I very rarely get to have this kind of a conversation with somebody. You were invited into an Iraqi's home to drink tea. How much sugar did they put in the tea?
It's not wild. It kind of ruined me. It's literally like, oh, you're right. It's half a cup of sugar, yeah, and some tea, and it's delicious.
It's because you're in,
you know, it's hot outside, and you're like, this is amazing. And it's like candy. Like, that's all you do is you just drink tea. And I'm, you know, it's funny. I'm kind of psyched for getting into this. Going there, I was like, oh damn. I bought like a suitcase of Clif Bars and just like, you know, ramen soup. I was like, because I don't know what, you know, what they eat over there. But the food, like their bread and the roasted chicken was like the best ever, man.
Oh my
and the
gosh.
Tea, I was like, I was set. I think I gained weight when I went to Iraq.
Yeah, that food, like, we had incredible chefs cooking for us. It'd be lamb, chicken. It would be all so much amazing food there. And the spices, like, I'd never heard or seen any of those spices since. And
I know. I tell the story always because we got in on a UN plane. Like, we were lucky to get in on a UN plane, and then we couldn't get one out. So we drove in, you know, a taxi from Baghdad to Amman, Jordan, which was like, I don't know, 18 hours, something. Yeah. It's hell. And when we finally made it to Amman, like, right on the streets, I bought a falafel for 25 cents. I've been like, and this was back in whatever, 2000. I've been trying to find falafel that tastes like that ever since, and I can't do it.
The search for the great Iraqi falafel.
That's it, man. That's it.
You know, we got a couple falafel houses here in Louisville that are pretty strong. The Saddam's former chef ended up being a refugee here, and he opened a place, and he trained a bunch of Iraqi chefs that, you know, that have since populated our market. And then in Nashville, there's a lot of Kurdish refugees, and you'll find a little falafel house here and there.
But, oh, wow. Yeah, I'm so down. I literally, honest to God, Fred, like, no word of a lie, every time I eat a falafel, I compare it to that one I got on the street.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that story. Well, we got one more whiskey, the 291. Now, this is where, out of respect for you and the day you have to come, I just want to make sure you're good to go here, because this will be whiskey number five. You good?
I'm better than good.
Love it. So this is made in Colorado, and it's finished. So by finished, I mean they put additional... They have an additional process to it. They finish it in with aspen staves. So, like, they get little pieces of aspen from the tree, and they put it in the barrel. So it'll be a completely different
profile. I didn't read the whole label. Like, you're talking about the staves, but I see, like, I smell something really sweet, and I see maple syrup barrels. That's pretty cool.
Oh, that's the one. That's M. That's M, the one finished in maple syrup?
Yep.
Right on.
Oh, wow. Very different, though. Something, like, really smoky in this one. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, that, you know, they're young, using smaller barrels, and but it's not like bad, you know. It's just the kind of their,
it's dirty.
Gonna get dirty on me here, Ray. All right, I like it. But it's definitely the smoke in 291 is always, you know, prominent, earthy.
Yeah, earthy.
You know, kind of, it's very, very, very different. Like it's one where I always finish with this one, because if we started with it, your palate may not recover because it's so different.
Right. Yeah. I feel that. Yeah, I like it.
Right on, man. Oh, so what was your favorite of the tastings so far? Well, it's all, we went through the entire thing. So do you have a favorite?
Yeah, I think it was the, and I don't want to be like it. Was it the, sorry, I'm missing one of the bottles. Okay, hopefully my kid didn't run out with that little bottle. Yeah, right? Oh, no, here it is. Yeah, I think it was the Kentucky Senator. And I don't want to be, because it was 15 years old, but between that and the Michter's, but it's tough to tell. Like, I guess your palate probably numbs a bit as you go through these, right?
You either adapt or you get numbed. Yeah, that tends to be the way to go. Like, you're either getting better, or you're like about to, you know, you won't be able to taste dinner. It depends on what level you are.
Yeah, I definitely like the Senator. It had some of the same, like, I don't know, complexities of the Michter's, but a little bit smoother maybe.
Well, I think that's a good choice.
What do I know?
That's a good choice.
I'll keep drinking. I'll let you know if it changes.
That's the, you know, yeah, so definitely taste it tomorrow and see, you know, go through it again, or maybe the next day, and see if, you know, see where it kind of fits. So
love it, man. What a treat. This has been my favorite podcast ever.
All right, man.
Thank you because we're drinking, but good conversation, and thank you for sending all this stuff.
Absolutely. Look, I love doing this, but more importantly, it's about, like, you know, it's about making new friends and, you know, bringing people into bourbon, educating people about the good stuff. And, you know, I just got to say, I can't wait to see you on stage again sometime soon. And, you know, really appreciate you making the time, brother.
Oh, I thank you, man. And definitely when we come into town, we'll hang. Our lighting technician, he's a rock star. When he heard I was coming on, you know, on the Friend Minute podcast, he was, oh, dude, listen to everyone. He's a bourbon, he's not obviously an expert like you, but he's in it, man. He's going to love it. I'm legit going to bring this stuff on the road. I'm going to save some for him, and we'll do it live.
Right on. Well, if you run out, I'll send you some more. So I've got a few bottles.
Yeah, looks like it. Thanks so much, bro.
Absolutely. Cheers, man.
Yeah, cheers to you, dude.
Be safe. Big shout out and thanks to Rain Maida for joining me virtually, you know, to sip some bourbon. What a great interview he was. And, you know, I didn't fanboy out too much, but, you know, I did let him know I was a fan. And I typically hold that a little closer to the vest. But he was so great and so fun to talk to. And how about that story about Iraq? I mean, anybody who's been there, you got tea from a local Iraqi, you know how much sugar they put in there. It's like, it's not even tea. It's just pure sugar. And it's so, so cool. I can't tell you how much I love that story. But that's going to do it for this week, folks. A lot of good guests coming up. Make sure you click that subscribe button however you get your podcast. So if you're on Apple, make sure you click and subscribe. And give us a review while you're at it. We're just north of 100 reviews on Apple Podcasts. And if you can help us get to 200, boy, that'd sure be great. I'd really appreciate it. And once again, if you don't have a sticker, hit us up on fredminnick.com. And we'll send you a sticker. That's going to do it, folks. Be safe out there. No licking handrails, no licking trash cans. Remember, vodka sucks unless it's being used for hand sanitizer. Cheers, everybody.
You've been listening to The Fred Minnick Show, brought to you by Michter's American Whiskeys and by 291 Colorado Whiskey. For more information on Fred's books, articles, and more, just go to fredminnick.com.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Ask Sherwin-Williams during the 4-Day Super Sale, April 19th through the 22nd, and get 40% off paints and stains with prices starting at $26.69. That means 40% off our most popular color family, blue. Psychologists have found it to be soothing and relaxing, which makes it especially great for bedrooms and bathrooms. And of course, get 40% off all of our other colors. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.